Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We just had a very intense conversation about tomorrow's show.
Oof.
I mean, intense.
Very rare that that happens between you and I.
Right. Now, it should be pointed out, you and I were in complete agreement.
Yes. Yeah, we weren't, this wasn't like first take. No.
This was not, we were not at loggerheads. We were in complete agreement. All I asked was, what about tomorrow? And your words to me, and this, and when Sean Kerry does this, these are fighting words. I may have to step in. Wow. Hey, we're locked in.
I can't tell you the last time I said that. Hey,
we are locked in with showers on Sealands Grove.
Yep.
Wetzel shows up in the building.
You don't even have to think twice with Greggy.
Extra effort guy.
Well, he
shows
shot
up.
79 on the course this morning. So.
God, it's getting worse.
But I think it was only after. Actually, I take that back. He only got 14 in before the rain this morning. So
okay.
he may have been. I think he was maybe on pace for a 79, but still.
On pace.
That's still right. pretty good.
But now we're having a problem with the game we carry on WKOK. Right? Now, the chief has responsibilities. Is that fair?
Sure, yeah. Thursdays, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Soccer?
Yeah. Game manager.
Right. Benefiting youth of our area. Would that be fair?
Fair beyond fair.
As opposed to benefiting his own personal wallet.
Well, it is the end of the month. You got to finish strong.
I forgot. Our version of Kenley Jansen's out there trying to close.
Yeah, we're hitting the 2/3 marker here on the track. So, you know, we got coming around the bend here. You know?
I got fires, lots of fires. I mean, honest to goodness, I mean, I've seen a couple of horror movies where there's been like big blazes, and it's nothing compared to the fires he tells us he puts out. All right, so.
Blazing Saddles.
Oh, my goodness. Did I ever tell you the Joe Paterno Blazing Saddle story?
If so, this was could be before I joined the show.
I don't think I've told the story on the air. So when did Blazing Saddles come out? 1970? Somewhere around there?
In the 70s, yes.
All right, so in the 70s.
And a movie absolutely, positively you could not make today.
No, you could not make the movie today. So it's in the off season. And one of Joe Paterno's neighbors says, hey, look, I can't remember the couple's name. He said, we're going to go out. Joe, Sue, why don't you come with me? We're going to go to a movie. And Joe says, okay, what movie are you going to go to? Blazing Saddles. All right. So Joe thinks it's a Western. A Western in the vein of Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne. Joe says, Steve, imagine my shock. He says, Steve, I couldn't believe it. He said, I thought it was a Western. I said, Joe, it does take place in the Old West.
Did he stay for the whole thing or did he walk out?
No, this was not like, okay, I think there was a limit. All right, let's go to our play-by-play call of the day.
Rockets one out to right field. That goes Castellanos at the wall. It's over here. Pete Alonso has the Mets club record. His 42nd home run. Of Mets baseball, and no one has ever hit more home runs in a season as a New York Met than the rookie, Pete Alonso. A stunning feat for a first-year player, the first rookie to own his team's single season home run record since 1938, and it's Pete Alonso in 2019.
Congratulations to Roy Hobbs. I mean, Pete Alonso. Yeah, he broke the record last night. Oh, did I ever tell you Joe's review of Titanic?
One movie after another here of Chopa.
He said to me, said, "Did you see Titanic?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "What'd you think of it?" He goes, "Too long, too much water." All right. All right, with that, we bring in Mark Brennan, 24/7 Sports, Fight on State. Mark, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What was your take from the press conference yesterday? I mean, there are a couple, you know, certain things that you specifically wanted and asked about. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I actually asked about was how important it was to get young cornerbacks a lot of first-team reps. You look at Penn State's starting corners in John Reed and Tariq Castro Fields, and those are guys who have played a lot of football. And I know when I've been to practice, and I know you've been to a lot more practices than I've been to, I was kind of struck by how much we were seeing the Keaton Ellises and those sorts of guys running with the first team. But then you think about it, and it makes a lot of sense. Your veterans have played a lot of football. If one of those guys gets banged up, you're going to need some of these younger players to get in there. And Steve, you know, as much star or nickel and dime as this team plays and is going to play, you're going to need those young corners to be able to play so you could have John Reed move to that star position. So that to me, and you know, James Franklin basically said that was part of the key, was to get those kids, Marquise, Keaton, some of those kids ready to play, and get them those first team reps. And then the other cool thing was I had a chance to ask John Reed, what's it like for you as a veteran player? How much do you sort of turn into a coach? Because you're there on the sideline when they're out there running with the first team. And one of the cool things he said is when they come off the field, you don't just pepper them with stuff. You'd be real supportive, and you'll wait to give most of your feedback when you're watching film so not to overwhelm them. So that was one thing. And I think some of the discussion about the offensive line, to me, Steve, you know, all these eyes are on Sean Clifford and how is he going to do. I think the much bigger story is going to be how does this offensive line play? Because to me, over the last couple of years, especially last year, it underperformed. And you had some veterans who underperformed. I think this offense is only going to go as far as that line takes it. I think Sean Clifford's going to be fine. I even think if he gets bumped up, that Levis give him some time, he'll be fine. But that offensive line really has to come together. And I think the fact that they're talking about maybe using some more rotation-type things to keep guys fresh, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I just think it's important that early in the season, in these first four games, they are able to firmly establish what they're going to run out there. And we're not seeing some things like we have the last couple of years where 10 games in the season, they're flip-flopping tackles or switching guys from offense to defense and that sort of thing. So I know that was long, but those are some of the things that I'm keeping my eyes on.
No, I understand that. You know, obviously with your daughter going to State High, you've gone to a fair amount of State High games over the last few years. Give us an indication of watching the growth and maturation of Keaton Ellis on the high school level that then set him up here on the college level.
Well, I mean, he was so small earlier in his career. His nickname was and still is among a lot of the coaches there, Peanut. But the thing that struck me last year, Steve, at State High was how much he grew and how long he got. Remember, he committed to Penn State at the beginning of his junior year. And I think at that point, he was probably 155 pounds or something. And now, I mean, you're looking at a 190-pound guy, right? I mean, or 108, well, whatever he is, who's built and has long arms. So physically, you know, he ended up going, it was before his junior year of high school, he went to a Penn State camp and ran a ridiculous 40. It was the 4.3s. And based on that and knowing how smart the kid is, Penn State, I don't want to say took a gamble, but they offered him very early before anybody else because they knew what kind of athlete he was. They knew his dad, obviously. They knew his dad, you know, his athletic background. And I think it was a little bit of a gamble at the time, because you never knew, was he ever going to grow into who he has become now. Right. But and ultimately he did, and it ended up being a brilliant move on Penn State's part. But the other thing about Keaton Ellis, and I know you've been to games and you've seen it, and I know T. Frank has seen it, he is a playmaker, okay? So yeah. You would watch him, he would block kicks, he would return blocks, he'd pick up a fumble and return it, he'd intercept a pass and bring it back, he'd return punts. He's a playmaker and a guy who knows how to get after the football. I think that's one thing that's been kind of missing from the Penn State secondary the last couple years, has been the player who is almost turns into a receiver with those types of skills in the secondary. You've had guys like Amani who would pick the ball off, but just, you know, didn't seem to have a knack. I don't think they've returned an interception for a score since, what was it, 16 against Kent State, maybe? I know you would know this better than I would.
Yes, it was.
But,
yeah,
but this is a guy who has...
So
this is a guy in Keaton who has legitimate ball skills in the secondary, and I think, you know, from what we understand, he was the team leader in turnovers. So I would really keep an eye on him. And that's the sort of thing that could be infectious. I would look at that with this entire defense, because you have multiple guys there now. Remember, Micah Parsons was the same kind of guy. I was not at the State High game a couple years ago, his senior year at Harrisburg, but Joe Nastasi said there was a turning point play in that game where they tried to kick it away from Parsons. One of the up guys kind of fumbled it. Parsons ran up, grabbed the ball away from the guy, from his own guy, and ran for a touchdown. So you're talking about a guy at linebacker with offensive skills. You're talking about a fully healthy John Reed now, a guy who excelled as a punt returner a couple years ago. You're talking about Tariq Castro Fields, who was an outstanding two-way player in high school. So I think one of the real keys, you know, stemming from Keaton Ellis and other players for this defense, is to be not only creating turnovers, but turning them into points. Because I do think there will be a learning curve for this offense, especially with the O-line, and I think any points you can get out of that defense, that's the next step for this group. You know, they've played well the last couple of years, but now I think they have the depth, the athletic ability to not only stop opponents, but to score some points themselves.
Yeah, Penn State scored over 100 points off of takeaways in 2016 on their way to a Big Ten championship. Mark, what would it mean that when we sit here in late November and we're looking at if Penn State were to be, quote, double digits in giveaway takeaway in the plus side, what can that mean to success for this team?
Well, I think it's exactly what I was talking about. The takeaways, yep. Steve, to me are, I think this offense will ultimately be fine if the O-line plays well. But I think it's going
right. We'll get to that.
The schedule sets up well for them. That I think they're going to be able to develop some consistency, some cohesion, those types of things. But what helps you if, as the offense is building, what helps that? Those turnovers. It takes the pressure off of the offense. They're going to get more short fields. Again, if the defense is able to score. So all of those things are huge. I mean, if you go and look almost every year, if you look at the teams that are the best in turnover margin, they're usually the teams. There are outliers there, but more often than not, you're going to see those teams near the top of the Big Ten standings.
Yeah, no question. So now back to the offensive line. It would be projected that all five starters would be returning for this season. In the end, Connor McGovern was a third-round pick by the Dallas Cowboys. Ryan Bates is now with the Buffalo Bills. You talked about this offensive line coming together. What are some of the elements you'll be looking for that tells you cohesively they've come together and they've become a difference maker in the offense?
The key guy to me in that regard is Michael Mennett. And I think when you hear that Michael Mennett was named the captain, that to me is big. And again, you're at more practices than I'm at, but from what I've heard through sources, you would look at Michael Mennett out there during practices, and he was that, you know, proverbial team leader, line leader, AQ Shipley type who, you know, not necessarily a rah-rah guy, but I heard there was an instance in the spring where Will Fries was having some struggles. And Will Fries has played a lot of football, and you saw Michael Bennett go over to him. And I'm not just saying this to try to call out Will Fries. I think it's more of a statement about Bennett, that Bennett went over and was, like, talking to him and saying, okay, this is what you got to get done. I don't know what the exact conversation was, but it stuck out to some people that, you know, Bennett went over and was talking to another veteran like you want your leaders to do. So from that perspective, I think having a guy who's played a lot of football now at center, you know, he played last year, was a key part, is I'm sure more comfortable in that transition from, you know, high school or outside tackle type offensive lineman to an interior lineman. I think that's going to be key. And then, you know, the other key guy that I'm looking at is Rashid Walker. You know, you look at him physically, and you've been around Steve long enough. I mean, he reminds you of a young Levi Brown. Now, when Levi Brown was his age, he was still kind of going back and forth between offense and defense. But just physically, the length, the fact that he weighs 320, and as James Franklin said, looks skinny. I mean, it's amazing. You stand next to that kid, it's like, oh, my goodness. I mean, he could be a 350-pound guy and really not look heavy at all. He has all of the physical skills. It's going to be – he's the guy – when I talk about these first four games being huge, I think they're the biggest for him, bigger than anybody else on offense. Because I think he's the kind of guy who can step in there and be a four-year starter for you if he sticks around that long at left tackle. But he needs to establish that foundation. He needs some success. You know, those are the things that are very important in your first four games, and that's why I like the way the schedule breaks out. I think had they opened against some sort of, you know, powerhouse opponent or had an Auburn early in the season like they will in a couple years, I think that would have been difficult for that sort of left tackle. But I think let him grow, let him kind of mature a little bit. You know, getting him into some games last year I think was important. But I think that's a guy that you could really build your offensive line around for the next 4 years. But the key is that he sets a good foundation and that the team sets a good foundation for him in these first four games.
Right. Yeah, because it's not just the length he has. Watch his footwork. He's got a good base with his footwork, and we'll see how he plays it. But you mentioned the schedule, Mark. Three games, bye week. Then a Friday game. Four games, bye week. Okay? Then four games in the stretch run. Mark, I don't think they could, in my opinion, I want your opinion, I don't think they could have handpicked a better placement of bye weeks in the schedule for this team.
No, I mean, obviously, having one before that Maryland game, you know. I mean, listen, I'll go off on a tangent here. Penn State, this has to be it for Penn State with these Friday night games. I mean, it's ridiculous. They should not be putting fans through this. And I'll end my rant on that. But fortunately, there is a bye week.
I agree with Mark. Right. Mark, I agree with you completely about the Friday night thing. I mean, I was always glad Penn State said they wouldn't play one at home. But the Friday night thing, this is the Big Ten. You don't need to be playing Friday night games. All right? You don't need that. Okay? Big Ten football is a Saturday game. All right? Yeah. And I don't like the fact, and I think they were surprised at the blowback that they got when they first did this. And I know you're trying to get money out of from Fox Sports. I know this is on FS1 and the whole deal. I got all that. But there's got to be a point where you look around and say, look, I mean, Maryland has to close the campus to play the game. Really? That's what you want in an academic institution, is to close the campus?
Yeah, well, and then what about the high school games? I mean, that's the one thing that, to me,
yeah, exactly.
You know, beyond being selfish as somebody who covers it or who is going to the game, I look at Maryland, that is a great, great, great area for high school football. I mean, a great area. You know,
yes.
this isn't like, you know, at Champaign, Illinois, with all due respect to Champaign, Illinois. There are great high school football teams in that D.C. area. And to interrupt that with this, I just think is it's unfair. I think it's unfair to the fans, and I think it's unfair to the local high school football players. I really do. But hopefully, Penn State's done this twice in 2 years.
And you know,
and that's
it's interesting.
Yeah,
that should be it for it. I mean, I can understand Labor Day weekend, opening weekend, where you've got the 5 day college football fest. I've got all that, but. I'll give you an example. I was talking with Tim Newton, who does Purdue's play-by-play for football. And this is when they first came out with the Friday deal. And I said, well, Tim, it'll give your program a lot of exposure. He says, Steve, he says, they're getting a lot of blowback. And this is Indiana.
Right.
He said, they're getting a lot of blowback from high school coaches here in Indiana. So it's not even, it doesn't really matter if it's a talent-rich area. Every area. Look, the formula's worked forever. You play high school football on Friday, college football on Saturday, and pro football on Sunday. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, and if you want to have Thursday games, go for the teams that have trouble getting on TV. Play them on Thursday. I'm completely fine with that. But the whole Friday thing, I'm sorry I stirred up that hornet's nest, but
I'm with you.
I just don't
No,
I'm
glad you did. I'm glad
anymore.
You brought it up. But I do want to ask you, though, about the placement of the bye weeks for development and adjustments. 3 weeks, then you play five, then you've got a bye, and then four. The placement of the bye weeks for Penn State for development and adjustments, how do you view that?
Yeah, well, as you know, I mean, one thing that I really like that Franklin has done, and honestly, Steve, you would know this better than I because I never really asked about it at the time, but I'm not sure how Joe handled the bye weeks. If he paid as much attention to the redshirting players, as James Franklin does, or the scout team players. I mean, during the bye week, for people who don't know, the Penn State football team, as you talked about, will use that as a development week for a lot of the younger players. So kids who are either redshirting or look like they may redshirt, or are kind of on the borderline, or walk-ons, or the kids who are really just killing it on the foreign team, and they will even have, I think, the GAs coaching a scrimmage between all these players. So when you talk about that, number one, what does that do for you? That helps keep these kids who aren't on the quote-unquote varsity engaged. And that's really important because I think if you look at through the grind of a season, remember, like Will Levis last year, when he was on the scout team,
yep.
He really, in spring practice, that was really his first big exposure to the PSU playbook and learning. Now, it's not to say that he hadn't seen things before, but his day in, day out last year was learning other teams' offenses so he could be on the scout team. So that's got to be a difficult thing for a kid to come in. Now all of a sudden you have this scrimmage, and you're getting the focus from the coaching staff. So I think that's good. And to be able to do that twice in the course of a year, I think that's really big. From a health and injury perspective, I think it's big that guys will be able to heal up. Obviously if there are serious injuries, that's not going to make a difference. But as everybody knows, the grind of the season – guys get banged up and bruised and, are playing with different things that aren't necessarily going to keep them out of a game. But, you may be sore or have some black and blue marks. That gives you a chance to kind of step back and get healthy. So, absolutely, having those spread out that way, I think, is a good thing.
Final question, and this is obviously a hypothetical. But to you, who would be a swing guy on offense and a swing guy on defense that you think helps determine which direction they're going?
I will, outside of the other guys that I had mentioned, I think Jahan Dotson is going to be a big player for the offense because what you have in Pat Freiermuth at tight end, and you obviously know what you have at K.J. Hamler, but you're going to need some other guys to step up. So I think Justin Shorter has an opportunity to do that. But to me, when I saw Dotson last year, I think Justin Shorter has a huge upside. I think he's going to develop into something really, really special. But I think right now, the guy that you can depend upon more is Dotson because he played more last year. And not only did he play, they went to him in clutch situations in tight games against Iowa. So I think, to me, he's a really important guy. And then over on defense, I'm going to go with that Lamont Wade, Jaquan Brisker safety position. Everywhere yes. else on defense, Steve, I really like the way they look over on defense. I mean, you know, their D line, their D ends are going to be scary good. That is not Franklin blowing smoke when he's talking that they may have the best D end group in the nation. And I think at D tackle, that's going to be another area where I think they just need a couple of guys, the PJ Mustafers, the Fred Hansards, the Damian Barbers. They need them, those guys, to get more snaps and get more comfortable. And I think they're going to be good with the Windsors and who have played a lot of football. Linebacker, they're going to be fine. So provided guys stay healthy, I think that is going to be a really, really strong position. And in the secondary, you have three spots that you really know what these guys are going to bring, provided that John Reed is healthy. So what does that leave? That leaves that one spot where you have Lamont Wade, who, from everything we're hearing, he's kind of beginning to, you know, live up to some of the hype, so to speak. And that's almost an unfair thing to say because, listen, sites like ours and, you know, recruiting services, absolutely, sometimes we overhype these guys. But, you know, Lamont Wade, I think he's not the biggest guy, but I think he has the physical talent, and he's another one of those guys that if you look back at his high school career, he was phenomenal on both sides of the ball, albeit at a very small level, or a very the single A at Clareton, which is a powerhouse program, but they don't play the greatest competition. I think he's a guy who has playmaking ability, who can get some stuff done. And then, you know, Jaquan Brisker is a JUCO transfer they brought in, who's also at that safety position. And for people who have not seen him, whoa. I mean, I think once he gets his head wrapped around the defensive playbook, you know, you're looking at a guy who's, what, 6'1 and, you know, 205 pounds, something like that.
Yep.
At safety,
yep.
He's like a mini linebacker. So I think once he gets – I think you have a good combination there, but I think it's imperative for one or both of those guys to really elevate their game over on defense.
Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time and your insight. We appreciate it very much.
I'm sure, I'll see you later, I'm sure. Thank you, Steve.
Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Bud Light 1047. Bud Light 1047. Bud Light 1047. Brewers Outlet. Brewers Outlet. Bud Light 1047. Bud Light 1047. Now that's what I'm talking about. Brewers Outlet has Bud and Bud Light 18-pack 12-ounce cans for just $10.47. Get it? We got it. Pickles, ice, cigars, lottery, and all your beverage and party needs are a one-stop shop at The Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
The Penn State Nittany Lions play on WKOK.
Play action steps up, waits, delivers long and deep. KJ Hamler got it at the 10, inside the 5, first and goal. Nittany Lions, what a throw, what a catch.
Penn State football is sponsored by Blaze Alexander Ford, Carpet Man, Mifflinburg Auto Sales, Glick Associates, Mifflinburg Hotel, Scarlet D, and Lewisburg Hotel. You can hear Penn State football on WKOK and WKOK.com.
You've patiently waited all summer to buy that new car or truck.
Well, this is it.
Hurry into all Sunbury Motors locations now through Saturday.
At Sunbury Motors Ford.
It's the final days of the Hurry Up and Save sales event. Choose from over 100 new 2019 Ford F-150s with discounts as high as $14,500. And choose from over 50 2019 Ford Escapes. They start at $17,985.
At Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
A 2019 Hyundai Kona SE starts at just $28,052. There's 13 2019 Tucson SEs starting at $22,619. And a 2020 Elantra SE is under 20 grand at $19,089.
At Sunbury Motors Kia,
there's 0% financing for up to 75 months on select 2019 Kia Optimas, Sportages, Cadenzas, Sedonas, and Serenos. Your interest rate will be zero until 2025.
And the summer with a new vehicle. From Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It is great to have you with us on the show today and a very interesting email question. The email question is as follows.
Adding Sean was one of the greatest moves in the history of radio. Oh, I'm sorry.
I did not write that. Did not send that to you. But checks in the mail, thanks.
No, actually, it was from Roger.
We could have said that to me when he was in the hall earlier today when we bumped into each other. But
no need to pile on.
Steve Jones at WKOK.com if you want to drop a line in our email inbox. Always available.
Jim sent this email to us, a few weeks ago, so I apologize. Maybe you just heard it on the podcast.
Oh, that's okay. My bad. I didn't forward that to you in a timely fashion. I will take the... Not your fault, that's me. That's on me.
Well, Jim, I just got this. So let's address your very thoughtful question, because I think it's terrific. He says, I enjoyed your take the other day on how future schedules for Penn State will be driven by the College Football Playoff Committee and what they value, even though that's still unclear. Spot on, Jim. Every year is a mystery as to what they're going to do. I wanted to follow up and ask why college football schedules are planned so many years in advance. I imagine that athletic directors feel the pressure to secure contracts with other schools so they don't get left holding the short end of the stick. But isn't that the same scenario for college basketball? We'll only find out Penn State's non-conference basketball opponents a couple of months before the season starts. I think it would be fun if we only found out Penn State's non-conference football opponents of the Blue-White game. Compliments on the show. Jim, thanks so much. Excellent question. Excellent question. So let's delve into this. Jim's premise about how far in advance college football schedules are done is absolutely spot on. So if you're sitting there and you look at, now Alabama has not played a true away game in non-conference since 2011 here at Beaver Stadium. If you notice, though, now they've changed up. Alabama's going to do a home and away with Wisconsin. They're going to do a home and away with Oklahoma. And there was one other doing a home and away with. I can't recall which school. And now they've secured that. Well, if they secure that, well, I may have to make sure I secure mine. So Penn State, for example, has Virginia Tech. They'll play at Virginia Tech next year. Then they have a little bit of a gap. Then they have Auburn here in 21, on the Plains in 22. Then West Virginia joins the party. And then after that, I think the two after West Virginia in 25, I think in 26 and 27 is Temple. Okay. So that's what, you know, what happens is exactly what Jim says. You're looking around as an athletic director and as a football scheduler, and you're saying, okay, let's make sure we're not the ones left holding the bag, to use Jim's words. I think Jim's exactly right. Basketball is different. Basketball also brings with it also a different negotiating scenario. You do try to set up a year in advance your tournament. And I'm talking about your in-season tournament. Now, Penn State switched up theirs this year. Penn State was supposed to go to Charleston, South Carolina this year, but instead they had an opportunity to play in Brooklyn with Ole Miss, whom they'll play first on Thanksgiving Eve, and then either Syracuse or Oklahoma State. It's a good, high-quality tournament, and it also brings with it Bucknell coming here to the Jordan Center on November 19th and Yale on November 23rd. That allows you to get the 32 games. Penn State was supposed to play in the Charleston tournament. They had set it up 2 years in advance. They asked Charleston if they could delay it a year, and that's the tournament Penn State will be in next year. Basketball also has with it designated games, Jim. So Penn State knows every year they're going to be playing in the ACC Challenge. This year it's at the Jordan Center against Wake Forest. They also have a designated game now with a team from the Big East. Last year they played at DePaul. It's called the Gavitt Games. This year they are playing at Georgetown, which should be one heck of a game down there. By getting into these tournaments, by the tournament and by getting into the designated games, I've now eliminated six games off my non-conference schedule. Six. I already have 20 conference games. So now I'm at 26. Every once in a while, Penn State will do an advance home and away with somebody. For example, Alabama's coming here this year, Jim. So Penn State set up a home and away with Alabama. They also had set up a home and away last year, or you know, a couple of years ago with Duquesne, which they ended up finishing out. So that home and away, that eliminates another game. Now I'm down to four games I need to schedule. This is where the negotiating gets interesting. You now have teams that know that they are going to be sought after to be one of the games on your schedule, and sought after to be a game on Michigan's schedule, and sought after to be on Stanford's schedule. And so they start playing the negotiating game. Well, they offer me $75,000. What do you think? How about 90? We'll tell them no, we'll tell you yes. So they do play that game at times. But these games are the four bought guaranteed games. So I've taken a 32 or 31 game schedule. 32 is the conference tournament. I've taken a 31 game schedule, Jim, and I've already eliminated 20, Big Ten. I've already eliminated four in-season tournament, which you try to do 2 years in advance. Like I said, I already know Penn State's going to Charleston next year. Right, so now I'm up to 24. Gavitt Games gets me to 25. ACC Challenge gets me to 26. Those are determined independently by the Big East and the Big Ten and the ACC and the Big Ten. So you're waiting for them to tell you where you're going. So now I'm up to 26 games. I'm down to five. Turned out in this particular time, I did a home and away with Alabama. So I already knew, boom, I'm done to 27. Now I only have to schedule four games. It's a lot more complicated with a football team. When you schedule Idaho, for example, okay, they get their guarantee. But you've got to work out your transportation. You have to work out your hotel. You know, there's a lot of things with a football team because of the pure size that you need to work out the logistics for, and you need more time to do, as opposed to a basketball team which will travel 32 people. It's easier to do that. You also have far more flexibility in your basketball schedule as opposed to football. In football, you want to get the when you have nine conference games, Jim, you want to make sure you get that one non-conference game that could be a steering game for you. Going back to your comment, which, Jim, I thought this whole email spot on. What can I tell the college football committee? Well, if you play Virginia Tech at Lane Stadium, like they will next year, if you play Auburn home and away, that does make a statement, in my opinion, to the college football playoff. But you also have the responsibility in football, as opposed to basketball, of having seven home games being critical to what you're doing. Because budget-wise, at a program like Penn State, with 31 sports, you have a budget responsibility in your scheduling. Because part of your job is to not only take care of your sport, but also to take care of multiple sports financially that can't make enough money to break even. So you do need seven home games. This is an odd year. So being an odd year, all three non-conference games are at home, because in odd years, Penn State plays four conference games on the road. Next year is an even year. So, since they have five conference games at home, like they do in every even year, they only have to play two non-conference games here. That's why they can play at Virginia Tech. Thus, down the road, you'll see Penn State schedule, I believe Nevada's on there, Villanova's on there, Delaware's on there. And those are games that do not involve any return at all, where the proceeds at Beaver Stadium, the parking at Beaver Stadium, the concessions at Beaver Stadium, the ticket sales at Beaver Stadium, they're all yours. And that's why it is so important in your scheduling at Penn State that you have seven home games. It's really important. So that's all part of the formula as to why you schedule this stuff in advance, because you don't want to be stuck at any point where you're looking around and saying, okay, wait a minute, we might have to play only six games this year because we didn't plan ahead. If everybody else is planning ahead, you have to do the same thing. If everybody else is planning ahead, you have to do the same thing. Now, it's interesting, when they scheduled Idaho, Idaho, believe it or not, was an FBS team when they scheduled them. It turned out that 2 years ago, they then decided to go back to FCS. Syracuse is always the one I bring up. When Paul Pasqualoni was the head coach at Syracuse, Syracuse was really good. They were winning 10 games a year. But then they thought they could do better than Paul. Turned out they couldn't. They changed coaching staffs. When they came to play Penn State in 8, and I think they played Syracuse in 8 and 9, I think. Yeah, it was 8 and 9 because they played Notre Dame in 6 and 7.
Yeah, because I remember it was Syracuse had the Duke basketball transfer there. Went to Syracuse and was their quarterback, right?
Yeah, Greg Paulus.
Yeah.
All right, so they played them 8 and 9. Well, it's not a great game anymore. So Penn State did do something dramatic in 8. To go back to Jim's point, can college football schedule on the fly? Occasionally you can. And this was one of them. Penn State was supposed to play Arkansas State that year at home. Joe knew he was going to have a really good team in 2008. They bought out Arkansas State and then paid a guarantee to Oregon State to come in because they wanted to boost the schedule. So you can do it on the fly, but it's difficult because usually everybody has their, quote, dance partners set 5-10 years down the road in college football. It's just easier for everybody's planning to do so. Basketball can do more on the fly, but they already have a lot baked into the cake to begin with. Far more baked into the cake than people realize in basketball. 20 conference games, tournament, now we're at 24. Gavitt games makes 25. ACC game makes 26. And then you get a home and away with somebody like this year's Penn State is playing Alabama. Great. Now at 27. Now you only have to schedule 4 games. And those are going to be 4 bought and paid games. So it's easier, and it's for them. They do a lot of their scheduling, basketball does, in February, March, April. What do you say we get together? How do you want to do it? Is it a bus trip? Is it a fly trip? Is there, you know, whatever it may be. You know, Penn State may want to play down at the Palestra. So suddenly you're playing, let's take LaSalle. They played LaSalle at the Palestra, so I did a home and away with them at one point. So you may want to do that. They don't have to do that this year because Iowa's playing Penn State in the Palestra. But that's the reason why there's such differences between college football and college basketball, because these college football contracts deal with huge money. I mean, you know, some of these guaranteed games are steep, 7 figures steep. So you have to have all that worked out far in advance to do it. It'd be nice if you could put a limit on 5, but it'd be 5 years, but it'd be such a free-for-all. And you do take the chance, like in the Syracuse case, where you schedule a game that like is going to be your marquee non-conference opponent, 10 wins every year like Pasqualoni was getting, and you end up with a team that is lousy, which Syracuse was in those years. That's why Joe was able to somehow get Mike Riley to come here. And Mike Riley was willing to go anywhere anyway, in Oregon State in 2008. I hope that answered your question, Jim. Excellent points and question. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hope that answered the question. That was a great question. It's scheduling is actually difficult as you're trying to put all the pieces of a puzzle together. For example, how you're scheduling the opening weeks of the season, where your bye weeks, all right, for football. Like this year, there are two bye weeks because of the Labor Day to Thanksgiving schedule provides 14 weeks instead of 13. Basketball. All right, there's a weekend that you have to now set aside for a Big Ten in December. Where does Thanksgiving fall? What date does your ACC game fall? What date do your classes end? What week are your finals? When does Christmas fall? You know, there's just a lot of variables I don't think a lot of people realize that go with this. Very interesting. All right. Great to have you with us. More coming up tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.